Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, August the 15th, and welcome to our commentary. We're already in the middle of August, if you can believe that. Kids are back to school, so I guess time has flown. 2022 has flown and is flying. Well, today we're going to talk about violence in North Mexico. Very bad situation, particularly in Tijuana and many of the other border towns. We'll get into that. And we're also going to talk about women in Afghanistan. The Taliban is not as gentle as we thought they were. But I want to begin with the raid at President Trump's home. You know, we've been talking about this. We've been following the story. And I said on Friday on my last video that I felt that this was way over the top, that the Biden administration way overreacted with respect to this raid. And now you're beginning to hear that similar messages from people like Jonathan Turley, professor of law school at George Washington, not exactly a political kind of guy, Alan Dershowitz, who was being interviewed on the radio today, and he says he wishes he had another chance to vote against Trump, but yet he disapproves of the way this was done. And if you listen to Jonathan Turley, for example, he has a tweet today in which he talks about the attorney general. And he refers to the attorney general as the shrinking man who is shrinking more and more every day. And if you listen to Professor Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz, he looks at all of this and says there were problems with the warrant. He wants to see the affidavit. Well, I don't know where this is going to go, but I don't think this is going to go where Democrats thought it was going to go. I think there was maybe a panicky effort on the part of Democrats to see how they could bring Trump down. And in fact, it has actually, I believe, worked in the opposite direction. And the problem that the Democrats have here is that the background about all of this is so strange. When President Obama left the White House, he took 30 million documents with him. Now, I don't blame President Obama or any other president for taking documents. Presidents take documents for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons they take them is because they want to be able to use these documents to write their books or to put these documents in their library, because these documents make their library a good place for historians to visit. So, you know, they want these documents. They want to be able to put them in their library. But nobody was asking questions about whether he took classified or declassified information. But now, of course, we're talking about that with President Trump. And this is, of course, happening with the FBI. And as you know, there are some very sore people on our side of the aisle who don't like the way the FBI has been acting. By the way, I'm not talking about the rank and file FBI people who are out there every day protecting us. That's not the problem. I want to make sure that's clear. That's not the problem. The problem is certain types up in the leadership of the FBI who have become too political, who have shown their political hands. I mean, this is not an opinion of mine. They've shown it in some of the tweets and some of the messages that they were sending each other and some of their actions. Look at the way they went after Peter Navarro. Look at the way they went after Paul Manafort. And look at the ridiculous raid on Roger Stone's home where they show up with machine guns and, you know, people like they were going to be raiding the home of a cartel leader protected by his own people. So the FBI has been over the top for many of us. And I think this action by the FBI once again shows that. I also think that, and this is why we need to see the affidavit, we need to know what they were doing in President Trump's home. Because there sure looks to me like they were just looking for documents. They weren't necessarily looking for one document. They were just looking for everything. And that's scary. When the FBI can do something like that, that's a little scary. So this story is not over. And I'll say it again. I'll go out on the limb and say it again. This is not going to end up the way the Democrats thought it was going to end up. This is actually going to end up exactly the opposite. It's going to end up helping President Trump, which is ironic because President Trump's stock was actually falling over the last 30 or 40 days. There were all kinds of people talking about DeSantis in 24 and a different direction in 24. I mean, now all of a sudden, of course, President Trump is back on top. So again, this is not going to turn out the way the Democrats thought it was going to turn out. Let's talk about violence in Mexico. I have a post over at the American Thinker about this today. And there has been a wave of violence in Tijuana, which is across from San Diego, and many other border towns in Baja California, as well as some other parts of North Mexico, particularly on the Pacific side of North Mexico. And the problem is that you have criminal elements who have been burning automobiles and basically intimidating the citizens. I mean, people got to the point over the weekend where the streets were empty, the shops were closed. I mean, the cities had been pretty much turned down or shot down because of all this violence. Now, the Mexican government did send troops into Tijuana and some of these other border towns, and some stability has been restored, but people are still very scared. They're very, very scared because if you live in one of these communities, you don't know when the next taxi cab is going to be set on fire. So it's a very scary time. Now, why is this happening? Why is this happening? That's the key. Why has this happened? Well, what you have seen now is these fights are actually between cartels. These are not the cartels going after citizens or even to some extent after the government. These are basically cartel groups fighting with each other for territory. And what they're fighting for are the routes to send the drugs and I assume even people to the United States. And why are they doing that? Because they've been emboldened by the Biden border policies. You know, I mentioned in my article at the American Post, American Thinker, that the cartels know, or the criminal elements know, that there's a very weak man in the White House, and the guy down in Mexico, frankly, is no better. So they're taking advantage of the situation. And until we deal with the problem, obviously we cannot fix the problem in Mexico. That's for the Mexican president to fix. But if we can fix our border, that's going to go a long way toward fixing this situation. But if you've seen the pictures of the north of Mexico, especially Tijuana, it's pretty frightening. You know, you got you would think you were in Beirut or in, Afghanistan or something like that. That's how it looked on the images that were coming out in the videos. People were actually taking videos, personal videos, and putting them on social media. That's how a lot of the information got out. And the videos were pretty frightening. I mean, absolutely frightening and dangerous to the people who live there. Well, I have a post coming out Tuesday morning talking about the women in Afghanistan. When we left Afghanistan, people like me were very critical of the way we left. Now, I never felt that we should have taken the troops out, especially given the military reality in Afghanistan. We had something like 3,000 troops in Afghanistan. They were isolated from the population. They were not engaging in any combat with the Taliban or the terrorist groups. They were basically sitting on the side as an insurance policy. And from time to time, we would conduct air raids on terrorists. For example, if we found out there was a group over here, we would take them out with F-16s or with other means. But we were not engaging them one-on-one as we used to 10 years ago. So there was really no reason to take out the troops, and there was no reason to leave the way we did. And President Biden made a huge mistake leaving the way he did, because aside from the fact that it showed a tremendous amount of weakness, it left all that material behind, and it left those military bases behind, and who's going to be using them? Well, it's not going to be the good guys, I'll tell you that. But now the Taliban has gone back to their old ways of how they treat women. And they're beating up women. They're shutting down schools for girls. That was one of the things that we, when we were there and when NATO was there, that was one of the things that happened, that women were able to go to schools. And for about 20 years, women actually had a chance to get an education. Well, that's over now. That's over now because the Taliban is back. So the question I ask in my post is, when is the Taliban going to turn Afghanistan into a terrorist country again, as it was back in the 1990s? In other words, when are they going to start training the next attack on the United States or a European city? Well, my guess is that they're already doing it. I mean, the fact that that fellow from the fellow that we shot down recently, in Afghanistan. The fact that he was sitting in a balcony feeling very comfortable with life in Kabul, Afghanistan, I think confirms that they were feeling pretty safe there. And I don't think we're going to have to go back, but we may have to take military action like we did against this guy and others to control the situation. And this was all unnecessary, totally, completely unnecessary. It did not have to happen. Well, there is a poll that came out over the weekend, the Dallas Morning News poll, showing Governor Abbott like 7 points ahead of Beto O'Rourke. It's pretty much the same number that has existed the entire year. If you look at all the polling data from the beginning of the year to now, that's where the numbers have been, between 6 and 7 and 8 and 9. So the governor has maintained that lead over Beto O'Rourke. Now, in this latest poll, Beto O'Rourke is at 39 and the governor is at 46. If you're rooting for Beto, that's not a good number, 39, because that's where he's been most of the year in these polls. Now, that number will probably go up a little bit as Election Day gets near, but I don't think it's going to go up a lot. So my sense is, I made a prediction about this campaign months ago, and I said it was going to be 53-46 or 54-45, that's going to be the final number. And the 54-45 depends a great deal on the Republican turnout. If there's a big Republican turnout, then I think it'll be 54-45. If it's a normal turnout, then I think it'll be 53-46. But either way, it's gonna be a victory for the governor. And what happens to Beto O'Rourke, I don't know. But the thing going against Beto O'Rourke in 2022 is that everybody knows who he is. Back in 2018, he had the advantage of being the new kid on the block. Not anymore. Everybody knows who he is. And I think in a state like Texas, that's hurting him a great deal. Well, we always like to close with On This Day in History. And it was on this day, really this week, in 1969, that the Woodstock Festival began. Now, if you remember the Woodstock Festival, then you are of my generation. By the way, I want to say hello to a couple of our viewers who've been posting. Thank you for the hello, and thank you for the posting. But if you remember Woodstock, then you are like me. You probably have a couple of grandchildren. But the Woodstock Festival, it was back in 1969, and a bunch of musical bands got together. Now, there were some real problems with the Woodstock Festival back then because it was in a farm outdoors, and there was rain, and there was mud, and it was very difficult to do the recordings, although they did put out an album back then. But, the impact of the Woodstock Festival, I don't think 25 years, 30 years from now, people will remember it. I think it's something of our generation, and I'm sure as time passes, people will forget it. Now, it may still show up on this day in history notes, but as less and less people are around to remember it, I suppose it'll be less and less consequential. But I guess the big thing that came out of the Woodstock Festival, if I remember, was Jimi Hendrix playing the Star Spangled Banner. That's what I remember of that album that we used to have. I have not listened to that album for years, but anyway, I know my brother has it somewhere in our collection of LPs. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Have a great day, and we will talk to you later. Again, thanks to all of you who've been posting some comments and all of you who listen and tell me that you like the broadcast, and we like doing it too. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Thank you very much.